जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय गोपी जन वल्लभा गिरिवर धारी। जय गोपी जन वल्लभा गिरिवर धारी। यशोदा नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, यशोदा नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, यमुना तीर वनचारी, यमुना तीर वनचारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। निताय गौर हरि बोल हरि बोल हरि बोल, निताय गौर हरि बोल। जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर सत हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस अभय चरणारविंद भक्ति वेदांत प्रभुपाद की जय। अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय। ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय। निताय गौर प्रेमानंदे। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज। All glories, all glories, all glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेष्व भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवत्युत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 10, titled Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. Text number 13. Ekaha Nanatvam Anvichan Yogatalpat Samuttitaha Viryam Hiranmayam Devaha Mayaya Vyasrijat Tridha Eko Nanatvam Anvichan Eko Nanatvam Anvichan Yogatalpat Samuttitaha Viryam Hiranmayam Devo Mayaya Vyasrijat Tridha Ekaha, he, one alone, Nanatvam, varieties, Anvichan, so desiring, Yogatalpat, from the bedstead of mystic slumber, Samuttitaha, thus generated Viryam, the seminar, Hiranmayam, golden hue, Devaha, the demigod, Mayaya, by the external energy, Vyasrijat, perfectly created, Tridha, in three features. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. The Lord, while lying on His bed of mystic slumber, generated the seminal symbol, golden in hue, through external energy, out of His desire to manifest varieties of living entities from Himself alone. Purport. In the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, text, the creation and annihilation of the material world are stated as follows. Sarva bhutani kaunteya prakritim yanti mamikam kalpakshaye punastani kalpadau visrijamyaham Prakritim svamavashtabhya visrijami punah punah bhutagramam imam kritsnam avasham prakritir vashat. At the end of each millennium, the creative forces, namely the material nature and the living entities who struggle in the material nature, all merge together into the transcendental body of the Lord. And again, when the Lord desires to manifest them, all of them are again displayed by the Lord. Therefore, the material nature is working under the control of the Lord. All of them under the agency of material nature and under the control of the Lord I think devotees need to mute their microphone. Yes? This is a problem in every talk. There's always somebody who unmutes and there's some noise that comes in to disturb the lecture. So do please follow this discipline, otherwise it causes a disturbance for everyone. Yes? Therefore the material nature is working under the control of the Lord. All of them under the agency of material nature and under the control of the Lord are thus repeatedly created and annihilated by the will of the Lord." Unquote. As such, before the creation or manifestation of the material cosmic world, the Lord exists as total energy, Mahasamashti, and thus desiring Himself to be diffused to many, He expands Himself further into multi-total energy, Samashti. From the multi-total energy, He further expands Himself into individuals in three dimensions, namely Adhyatmik, Adhidaivik and Adhibhautik, as explained before, Vyashti. As such, the whole creation and the creative energies are non-different and different simultaneously. Because everything is an emanation from Him, the Mahavishnu or Mahasamashti, nothing of the cosmic energies is different from Him. But all such expanded energies have specific functions and display as designed by the Lord. And therefore they are simultaneously different from the Lord. The living entities are also similar energy, marginal potency of the Lord, and thus they are simultaneously one with and different from Him. At the stage of non-manifestation, the living entities, living energies remain potent in the Lord. And when they are let loose in the cosmic manifestation, they are exhibited differently in terms of different desires under the modes of nature. Such differential manifestations of the living energies are conditioned states of the living energies, entities. The liberated living entities, however, in the Sanatana eternal manifestation are unconditionally surrendered souls, and therefore they are not subject to the conditions of creation and annihilation. So this creation takes place by the glance of the Lord from His bedstead of mystic slumber. And thus all the universes and the Lord of the universe, Brahma, are again and again manifested and annihilated. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuron Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapadakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padang Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Nitinamine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanepyo Vaishnavepyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. I am very, very happy to be with all of you in Jagannath Mandir, Sri Jagannath Mandir, Bangalore. It is interesting that today is Akshaya Tritiya, and some years when I was in your temple, I gave a lecture on Akshaya Tritiya on exactly this day, on this tithi. So it's a coincidence that I'm here with you again on the Akshaya Tritiya. And a warm welcome also to those on Facebook who are watching from different places. I do hope and pray that all of you are safe, well and healthy in the midst of this coronavirus pandemic, and that your loved ones, your family members, your other ashram inmates are also well and safe. And I also hope that you are coping with the restrictions of the lockdown, being confined to your own homes or the ashrams that you live in. And as I keep mentioning in every talk that I give to the devotees at this time, that even though this coronavirus pandemic has cast a pall of gloom everywhere, it's like a cloud that has shed darkness everywhere, but every cloud has a silver lining, as the proverb goes. Therefore, we should take advantage of this opportunity to go deeper into our Krishna consciousness, and also to do other things that will help us in our Krishna consciousness, like looking after our health and so on. So welcome once again to all of you. Today we are on the 13th verse of the 10th chapter of the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. Now, even though we are in the 10th chapter, it may be useful to have, just in 2 or 3 minutes perhaps, a brief summary of the second canto thus far. The first canto is, of course, a part of the Srimad Bhagavatam, but it is a kind of a prelude. I'm sorry, there seems to be some noise that may be coming in, but it's on the street outside and there's nothing I can do to prevent that noise from coming in. I hope that's not disturbing you. I think in some of the neighboring buildings some children or youth are playing. Am I back? The Zoom got disconnected for... My Zoom got disconnected. I don't know what happened. Sorry. Some technical problem perhaps. So, as you know, Shukadev Goswami doesn't start speaking till the second canto begins. He arrives in dramatic fashion at the end of the first canto, at the place where Parikshit Maharaj has arrived to fast unto death, and many sages have assembled there, and they have come there from different regions of the universe. So Parikshit Maharaj has asked them the all important questions of what is the duty of a person who is about to die, what should he hear about, worship, remember, chant about, and so on. So having asked these questions and repeated them upon Shukadev Goswami's arrival, now the second canto begins. And Srila Shukadev Goswami very easily gets to the point, very quickly. Tasmat Bharata Sarvatma Bhagavan Ishvaro Harihi Shrotavyah Kirtitavyascha Smartavyah Chechatabhayam. That for one who desires to be fearless, especially of the fear of death, should constantly hear about, chant about, and remember about Lord Krishna or Lord Hari, who is the Lord of the devotees. So he has set the tone. And he speaks now about the process of devotional service. And this continues for some time. And then, in course of time in the second canto, as the chapters go on, Parikshit Maharaj asks him questions pertaining to the creation of the universe. And he wants to know how it was created from the universal form, and what was the sequence of creation, etc. So Shukadev Goswami begins answering all of that. From chapters 4 to 6, he speaks about the process of creation. In chapter 7, he speaks about the scheduled incarnations. In chapter 9, or chapter 8, there are further questions about Brahma and the creation. And then in chapter 9, which is the chapter just prior to the one we are discussing now, specifically, there is a description of the penances of Lord Brahma as he sits on top of the lotus flower. And then the description of how the Supreme Lord appears before him and blesses him, and he speaks the Srimad Bhagavatam to him, the Chatushloki Bhagavatam, the summary of the Bhagavatam in just 4 verses. And he gives him good instructions, and then he departs after blessing him. In the meanwhile, Brahma begins the task of creation of the universe, the secondary creation of the universe, as has been inspired to him by the Lord. In the meanwhile, Brahma's foremost disciple and son, Narad Muni, comes there. Brahma speaks the Srimad Bhagavatam in a condensed form to Narada. Later on, Narad Muni goes and describes this in slightly expanded form to Vyasadeva. So this is all described here in the 9th canto. And then from the beginning of the 10th canto, of the 10th chapter, I beg your pardon, now Shukadev Goswami is beginning to answer the question of Parikshit Maharaj as to how the Lord manifested the creation, the cosmos, from the universal form. So the 10th chapter of the 2nd canto begins with the famous verse, Atra sarga visargascha sthanam poshanam utayaha manvantareshanu katha nirodha muktirashrayaha. So in this verse, the 10 divisions or 10 different topics that are described in the Srimad Bhagavatam are mentioned. And Shukadev Goswami is going to elaborate on these 10 categories in order to explain the topic of how the cosmos is manifested from the universal form. So these 10 topics are very important. The great Puranas, the Mahapuranas, they have descriptions pertaining to these 10 topics. And since the Srimad Bhagavatam is the topmost of all the Puranas, therefore naturally it must have a description of these 10. So the first 9 are important topics, but relatively speaking, in comparison to the 10th topic, they are not the most important. A description of the understand the 10th topic, which is Ashrayaha. So, in the first few verses of the 10th chapter of the 2nd canto, Shukadev Goswami briefly describes each of these 10 categories, starting from Sarga, which is the primary creation of the 16 elements, then Visarga, which is the secondary creation that comes after that with the combination of the 3 modes and so on, including the workings of Brahma. And then Sthanam, which means the sthiti, or the position of the planetary systems, and especially of the living entities on these planetary systems, and how, if they follow the laws of the Lord, the plan of the Lord, then they will achieve the poshanam, or the nourishment, or the protection of the Lord. And under the protection of the Lord, there is a driving force for them to create things, which is the creative impetus or utaya, which is the desire for fruitive work. And then there is manmantara, the duration of the manus. The manus, they prescribe different regulative activities and laws like manusmriti, manusamhita, etc. for humanity to follow, to live a life that is conducive for spiritual development. And then Ishanukatha. Isha is the Lord. And so the descriptions of the Supreme Lord in His various incarnations, that is Ishanukatha. And Nirodhaha refers specifically to the time where the living entities enter into Mahavishnu and remain there till such time as the next creation is manifested again. Muktihi refers to liberation and the winding up of the whole cosmic manifestation. And Ashrayaha, the tenth topic, it deals with the Samam Bonam, to use Srila Prabhupada's words, the topmost topic of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the topmost topic of entire knowledge. So the first nine, as I said earlier, are meant to illuminate the tenth. And the Ashrayaha, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the Ashraya or the shelter for all the previous nine topics. But the tenth topic, Ashraya or Sri Krishna, does not have any Ashraya himself. So he is called Svashrayashrayaha. Sva-ashraya-ashrayaha. So he is his own shelter. He does not have any other shelters. So in this way, Shukadev Goswami, having spoken about the different elements or the 10 topics of the Srimad Bhagavatam, now he begins to speak of, he also mentions then, as he continues in the previous verses, about the three Purushas, the Adhyatmik Purusha, referring to the living entities who have senses, then the Adhidaivik Purushas, the demigods, who control the Adhyatmik Purushas, all of us. And then finally there is the Adhibhautik Purusha, which refers to the material body. So these three Purushas are interdependent on each other. And but over and above this interdependent categories, these three, there is that one category who is supremely independent, and because of whom all these other three have been created as being interdependent. So neither the demigods, nor the individual living entities, nor the body and the material nature are independent. All are interdependent, and ultimately all are dependent on the Supreme Ashraya, which is Krishna. So in this way, Shukadev Goswami in the previous verses has described how he has set the ground, so to speak, for the creation. And then he begins the description of how the Supreme Lord is Mahavishnu, lies down in the causal ocean. He generates the universes from the pores of his skin, and then he enters into each and every universe as Garbhodakashayi Vishnu. So whether it is within the universe as Garbhodakashayi Vishnu or as Mahavishnu, the Lord lies down in the waters generated from his own person. And therefore he is called Narayana. So this is mentioned in the 11th verse, just two verses prior to this. So the word Narayana is mentioned here. It's interesting to just reflect on this word Narayana. So the word Nara means a person. Nara refers to that which comes from the Supreme Person. Amongst all the Naras or persons, the supreme Nara is Lord, the Supreme Lord Himself, Krishna. So that which emanates from the Lord, and specifically in this context it means the water, that is called Nara. And because the Lord lies down in this water, or takes refuge of this water, so to speak, apparently, He is called Narayana. Ayana means to take shelter. Nara refers to the water that comes from the Supreme Nara. So because the Lord lies down in that transcendental water, which has emanated from His person, from His transcendental body, He is called Narayana. But He is also called Narayana because He is actually the refuge of that water which emanates from Him. So that transcendental water has not come independently from nowhere. That has also come from the Supreme Lord, from His very own spiritual body. So this is the second meaning of the word Narayana. And elsewhere there are interesting purports given to the word Narayana. The word Nara indicates the individual living entity, and the word Nara refers to the aggregate of all living entities. The word Ayana refers to refuge or shelter. So because the Supreme Lord is the shelter of the aggregate of living entities, therefore He is called Narayana. Very interesting definition. So He is also the proprietor of all the living entities. The word Ayana also refers to propensities. And the Nara, the aggregate of living entities, and all the individual living entities have certain propensities. And the Supreme Lord is the origin of all these different propensities. For example, we have a tendency to be angry. We have a tendency to love. So all these propensities, these tendencies, exist in us because they originally existed in the Supreme Lord. Or they do exist in Him. So therefore, He is called Narayana. And also, there is another interesting definition which is given in the Smritis, and which is that from the Supreme Lord, who is Nara, come all truths, which are called Naran. And because the Supreme Lord is a refuge or the shelter of all truths, and He is the Supreme Truth Himself, from whom all other truths emanate, and in whom all these truths actually take refuge, so therefore He is called Narayana. So this is these are some of the beautiful ways in which the scriptures elaborate on the name Narayana. So having described Narayana, then in the next verse, Shukadeva Goswami continues speaking about how these ingredients and everything are manifested. And then coming to the current verse, the 13th verse, Shukadeva Goswami mentions, and I repeat, I'll read the translation again. The Lord, while lying on His bed of mystic slumber, generated the seminal symbol, golden in hue, through external energy, out of His desire to manifest varieties of living entities from Himself alone. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada cites two verses from the 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the 7th and 8th verses. In the 7th verse, Sarva Bhutani Kaunteya Prakritam Yanti Mamikam Kalpakshaye. So he says, O Kaunteya, O son of Kunti, Sarva Bhutani, that is all the living entities, Prakritam Yanti Mamikam. Prakriti means nature. Yanti means to enter. Mamika means my nature. So Sarva Bhutani, so all the living entities, my dear son of Kunti, enter into my nature. When do they do that? Kalpa Kshaye. Kshaya means destruction. And today is Akshaya Tritiya. So Kshaya means destruction. Akshaya means indestructible. That which can never be destroyed, that which is endless. So I'll briefly talk about Akshaya Tritiya at the end of the class. So in any way, Kalpa Kshaye. So at the end of the millennium, then all the living entities, they enter into my nature. Kalpa Adau Visrijambyaham. And once again, at the beginning of the next kalpa, I create again, and all these living entities manifest again. And in this way, the entire material nature is manifested again and again, and the living entities, they reside in me for some time, and then again they're manifested into the material creation. Then when the material creation is destroyed, they again come and reside in me. And when the creation is displayed, they once again go into the creation. And this goes on and on endlessly. So the living entity is in this endless cycle of being within the manifested material creation. And when it is destroyed, the creation that is, he enters into the Lord and again is brought into the material creation. So the purpose of life is to get out of this bondage of being tied down in the cycle of birth and death within the material creation. And the process for doing that is to become Krishna conscious. So in this context, in this verse here, the process of how how Mahavishnu actually begins the creation process is mentioned here from his yoga nidra, his mystic slumber, which is not like our nidra or our sleep, because in our sleep we are completely in the mode of ignorance. We forget who we are, what we are. We don't know what our surroundings are. And elsewhere, as Srila Prabhupada states, when a king sleeps and a dog sleeps on the street, there is no difference between the two, because both the king and the dog are completely immersed in ignorance. They have no idea of their identity and of their surroundings. But the Lord's sleep or slumber is not like that. It's spiritual sleep. It is yoga nidra, in which the Lord never loses consciousness or awareness of either himself or anything else that is in his environment. So being so situated in the yoga nidra, the Lord manifests this seminal symbol, which is golden in hue. It is the intervening step to now set in motion the process of creation. And what was the intention of the Lord? That through the external energy, he desired to manifest a variety of living entities. So who were already in him at the time, who were after the universal cosmos was destroyed. So he sets in motion this potency, and Srila Prabhupada in the purport mentions here three terms: Mahasamashti, which is the total energy, the total energy is Samashti, Mahasamashti, and then there is Samashti, which is the total creation, and then the Vyashti. The Vyashti refers to the three categories: the Adhyatmik Purusha, the Adi Daivika Purusha, and the Adi Bhautika Purusha. Now generally when we read, we remember these three terms, Adhyatmik, Adi Daivik, and Adi Bhautik, we think of it in terms of only the three miseries, the three kleshas. Adhyatmika Klesha, Adi Bhautika Klesha, Adi Daivika Klesha. So what is the origin of these terms? They come from this particular categorization. So, Adhyatmika Klesha are those kleshas, you know, that are Adhyatmika, are those that actually come from our own body and mind, from our senses, etc. Adi bhautika klesha, kleshas that come from the bodies of other living entities. And adi daivika kleshas are those that come from the controlling entities that exist in the universe, the demigods. So, that is vyashti, these three categories. These three categories are under the multi-total energy, the samashti, which is under the control of the Mahasamashti, that is ultimately Mahavishnu. And Mahavishnu is an expansion, ultimately of Krishna, who resides in Goloka Vrindavan. So in this way, Shukadeva Goswami has now started speaking about the process of creation. So I leave a few minutes to just briefly speak about Akshaya Tritiya. This is the Tritiya, the third day in the Vaishakha month. And it is a very special day because it is said that on this day, any activity which is performed becomes very long-lasting, even if it is material. So therefore, you know, on this day people like to go and buy gold and they like to do other ceremonies like entering the housewarming ceremony, getting into the house or getting married, they're hoping that the marriage will last. Of course, in the material world nothing lasts forever. But in a material sense, the idea behind these ceremonies is that there will be longevity, you know, long-lasting effect because of those activities having been begun on this auspicious day of Akshaya Tritiya. Many things are said to have happened on this day. I'm sure you all know by this time. You must have heard so many things about the Akshaya Tritiya. It is said that the Akshaya Patra was given to Draupadi by Krishna. That is the time when this particular pastime happened. Draupadi, Yudhishthira received this Akshaya Patra from the sun god. And that this is the time when Krishna visited Draupadi and the Pandavas. So, this is also the day, it is said, the Tithi when Ganga descended to the earth. It is also said that this is the day when Parashuram was born, or rather he appeared. This is the day when Treta Yuga also started. So there are so many such things. This is the day that Sudama visited Krishna in Dwarka. And this is the day when Vyasadeva began dictating the Mahabharata to Ganesh, who sat and started, you know, writing. He was the first transcendental stenographer. So many such events happened on this day. As devotees, for us, it is very important to keep in mind that Akshaya Tritiya for us is important because it strengthens our Krishna consciousness. Because truly speaking, Krishna consciousness is the only eternal activity. All other activities have a temporary duration. So, to avail of the benefits of Akshaya Tritiya even deeper, we should try to strengthen our practices of Krishna consciousness on this day. We should chant better, we should chant more, we can hear and chant more, we can read more, worship more, etc. And then Krishna conscious activities, which in any case are transcendental and they give permanent benefit, will now be further strengthened by virtue of the fact that they are performed on this particular day of the Akshaya Tritiya. So, all good wishes to everybody on this auspicious day, and hope and pray that we can all together, collectively as well as individually, perform our Krishna conscious activities with even greater enthusiasm on this day and continue on till our last breath, and then after that, if Krishna so wills, if we are so qualified, then Krishna will take us back to his abode. And if we are not qualified, then he will give us a birth in a very, very favorable situation where we can continue our Krishna consciousness, being born in the family of nice, advanced devotees of the Lord. So thank you all very much. I think I'm leaving a few minutes now for questions, right? So who, the moderator of the discussion, I'm supposed to leave time for questions, isn't it? Who is moderating? Hare Krishna, who is moderating the discussion? Okay, so if anyone has questions, you can then unmute and ask your question and then mute it back again. Remember to just mute your mic. Say that again.
Maharaj, questions, devotees are writing on the chat.
Oh, they're writing the questions on the chat. Okay. Okay, so I think yes, that's a very good way of doing it. The first question is, can one stop fearing death without surrendering to Krishna? In general, no. Because that is the only way to be abhaya, fearless. So mostly everybody is afraid of death. Of course, sometimes there may be people with a certain kshatriya tendency who actually go out into the battlefield fearless even of death. So such mentalities are found in some kshatriyas. So in this Kali Yuga, to what degree it is found, I don't know, it's rare. But from a spiritual point of view, generally one cannot be fearless unless one has surrendered to Krishna. Next question is, has Srila Prabhupada mentioned any glories about Akshaya Tritiya in his books? I do not remember reading anything in Srila Prabhupada's purports or his lectures specifically on Akshaya Tritiya. If anybody remembers anything, you can point out, but I do not remember Srila Prabhupada specifically mentioning Akshaya Tritiya and the glories of Akshaya Tritiya anywhere in his books. Not, it doesn't readily come to my mind. Next question is there a significance of Mahavishnu's slumber? Why is Mahavishnu asleep and not awake? Well, as I mentioned, for the Supreme Lord, there is no difference between his state of sleep and his state of wakefulness. There is such a difference for us, but not for the Supreme Lord. So whether he's asleep or he's awake, it really makes no difference for him. And as he lies there in his slumber, he gives rise to all the universes, and then he casts his glance. So he is quite active even in his state of slumber. How are our bodies considered to be adhibhautik? Yes, as Prabhupada explains in the purport in that verse, that sometimes the body is also called a purusha or a person, because the living entity present within enables the body to act in a certain way. So just refer to that purport and you will get a more elaborate answer. Is there any required qualification to read Srimad Bhagavatam? Yes, one must hear Srimad Bhagavatam from the bona fide disciplic succession. That is the first and most important criterion. One must not hear from those who are professional reciters or from one who do not believe in the principle of pure devotional service, who do not believe in the personality of Godhead, rather they believe in some impersonal conception and so on. Therefore, the important thing is that one must hear from the proper disciplic succession coming from Krishna himself, the devotional disciplic succession. The second is that one must hear with faith and devotion. And with full attention, with rapt attention. So these are some of the qualifications for hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, next question is, what happens to the karma of the jiva at the time of annihilation? Well, it remains in the memory, so to speak, to use a computer analogy. It remains in the backup memory of the Supreme Lord. The Lord never forgets anything. Therefore, He remembers perfectly every single karma of every single jiva who resides within Him after the cosmic manifestation has been wound up or has been destroyed temporarily for one night of Brahma, or after the death of Brahma till such time as the next creation is manifested. So the Lord remembers everything, and then at the time of the next creation it's all unleashed into the creation. Brahma is then empowered, and there are various agents acting on behalf of the Supreme Lord who carry forward this memory so that every jiva who is lying dormant in Mahavishnu or in Garbhodakashaya Vishnu, at the time of the manifestation of the creation again, the jiva is brought forth into an appropriate environment according to the karma that he had before the universal devastation. The right kind of planet, the right kind of body, the right kind of species, the right kind of circumstances. Everything is arranged by superior arrangement. Okay.
Facebook question.
Okay, Facebook question. What is that?
When the jivas enter and stay in the transcendental body of the Lord, do they become fully Krishna conscious?
Okay, so the question is that when the jivas enter into the body of the Lord, then do they become Krishna conscious? No, they do not. So the question pertains to the time when the universe is destroyed, and there are many jivas who have not yet become Krishna conscious, who are not yet eligible to go back to the spiritual world. They reside within the body of the Lord till such time as the next creation is manifested. So are such jivas, do they become Krishna conscious when they reside within the body of the Lord? The answer is no. They are in a state of deep forgetfulness. There is a similar state, like maybe during this lecture some of you sitting in front of your computer screens dozed off to sleep. Yes? Admit it. Somebody, at least somebody, has dozed off to sleep. Very rarely have I seen any lecture, Bhagavatam lecture, where nobody nods off to sleep. And especially now, when you're in the privacy of your own home and there's no one to see you, surely somebody has nodded off to sleep. So there are just a few moments or a few minutes of sleep. Then you may take an afternoon nap or something, maybe for an hour. Then you may take a good night's rest for maybe 6 or 7 hours. Then there may be, there will come the time of death, when we will be in forgetfulness for many months. You know, some years also perhaps, depends on the karma. And then there is a period after the day of Brahma, where we will be in Garbhodakashayi Vishnu for some time. And then there is the period after the death of Brahma also, when the whole universe is destroyed, and there we are in Mahavishnu's body for an even longer duration of time. So all these different periods of forgetfulness are the same, basically. So just as a person who is a non-devotee, when he or she sleeps, that person doesn't become a devotee. So similarly, even though the living entity at the end of the universal annihilation, even though he or she is in the body of Mahavishnu, does not become a pure devotee automatically, because there is a deep state of forgetfulness and sleep. One becomes Krishna conscious only by association of devotees and taking up the process of Krishna consciousness. Okay?
Is there effect of Kali Yuga in the upper planetary system?
Is there the effect of Kali Yuga in the upper planetary system? Generally, no, because these four yugas are specifically meant for the Earth planet. And these ages pass by very fast in terms of the demigods' span of time. Okay, let's come back to the Zoom. And where does Krishna say explicitly that he is the only God in Bhagavad Gita? Maybe this question is being asked by somebody who is very, very new. If you have attended the basic lectures there, I'm sure wherever you are, maybe in Bangalore or somewhere, I'm sure the devotees will explain to you the host of verses where Krishna says this again and again and again. So there are many, many verses in Bhagavad Gita where you will find this. So please attend the classes there and you will be able to hear, and also read Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is, and you will see many such verses coming up there. How can we understand Krishna's plan for a sadhaka as he advances? Does the Lord give any hint? Definitely. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayanti te. So for one who is serving Krishna priti purvakam, with love, dadame buddhi yogam tam, Krishna gives that intelligence from within. Yena mam upayantite, by which the devotee is able to progress further in the path of Krishna consciousness. So Krishna will give intelligence in various ways, sometimes from within, sometimes from without. So we are very fortunate that we are under the divine shelter of the Supreme Lord and his dear devotees, and particularly in the mission of his dear pure devotee Srila Prabhupada. Yes? Okay, so there are so many questions, but we are running out of time. Okay. Why is the Srimad Bhagavatam a natural commentary on the Brahma Sutras? Why is it that every sampradaya compulsorily must have a specific commentary on the Brahma Sutras? Okay, to answer your question, why is the Srimad Bhagavatam a natural commentary on the Brahma Sutras or the Vedanta Sutra? The answer is because the author of the Brahma Sutra is the same as the author of the Srimad Bhagavatam, that is Vyasadeva. And Vyasadeva in the Srimad Bhagavatam has specifically stated that the Bhagavatam is the natural commentary of the Vedanta Sutra. Yeah? So that is mentioned in several verses, so we don't have the time to discuss those verses. So that's the first point. And regarding every sampradaya having its own commentary on the Brahma Sutra, yes, that is a kind of a tradition to establish the bona fides of your sampradaya. So the Gaudiya devotees did not feel the necessity of having a separate commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, because for the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, the Srimad Bhagavatam is the most important text. And the Srimad Bhagavatam is already the natural commentary of the Vedanta Sutra. So the Gaudiya devotees feel there is no need for a separate commentary. However, a certain incident happened in Jaipur, and Baladev Vidya Bhushan went there to defend the Gaudiya Vaishnavas from the challenges that were offered by the Ramanandis. And then Govinda Bhashya was compiled by Baladev Vidya Bhushan, which is also a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. Okay, so now there are so many more questions, but actually I have other lectures also to give today. So I think we will stop here. Thank you all very much for giving me an opportunity to be with you. And Anukul Keshav Prabhu, thank you for inviting me to be with all of you today. And to the devotees who have been moderating this discussion, and to all of you who are present here, not only in Bangalore, but also from other places who are present on Facebook. So thank you all very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanande. Hari Hari Bol.
Thank you, Maharaj. Maharaj, Anukul Prabhu is on.